Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. So here we are again for the next hour. Going to have some fun. As always, stuffing 2 pounds of radio bologna into a 1 pound bag. And I've got some good bologna for you. So hopefully you would stick around for the whole hour here. Although I don't know how you listen to it. I mean, I listen to podcasts and you could listen for a while and then you turn it off and you come back. So that's sort of the freedom of the internet and the freedom of the podcast. So I hope you're here for the whole hour, but if you're here for the first 20 minutes, I hope you come back for the remaining 40. I'm finishing the show. That's all I know. I'm here for 60, okay? 60 minutes. I hope you will be too, in one form or the other. But anyway, let's get started. I was really happy. I was ecstatic, to be honest with you. I saw a story this week on the internet, and let me preface this by saying that I take a lot of heat from many of my friends because I do not have a smartphone. I have a flip phone. And I have been accused of hating technology, of being a Luddite, of being out with the times, you name it, a dinosaur, whatever it is. But the fact of the matter is, I'm really not all that enamored with the iPhone. First of all, if I can talk to Tim Cook of Apple directly, Mr. Cook, I believe you need to rebrand the iPhone. I understand that it came out in 2007. And when Steve Jobs introduced it, it was an iPhone because people used this device as a phone. And what Apple did initially was add on to the existing phone. However, and I'm not sure if this was ever in Steve Jobs' vision for that device, but as we know, I think talking on an iPhone is about 15th now on the use of an iPhone. There's pictures, there's texting, there's internet access, there's games, there's movies. I mean, everything's going on that iPhone except talking. I think if Alexander Graham Bell was able to time travel ahead, he would come back and say, look what they've done to my phone, Ma. I mean, we're texting again. We're back to Morse code. He would say, wait a minute. The reason I invented the phone was so you could hear people's voice, so you could communicate, because all we had before were smoke signals and little taps and bleeps. And now you guys are back to the taps and bleeps again. What are you doing? So I'm on Alexander Graham Bell's side. So I have bucked the system, and I have never had an iPhone. Now, my wife has one, and don't get me wrong. I understand the advantages of an iPhone. We've used the GPS. It's fantastic. We've gone on and, used the internet if you needed to find something. I get it. But I am not tethered to that thing. I don't take pictures of my food when I go to a restaurant. I don't take a million selfies. My flip phone is more, actually. People think that I don't have any technology at my hands. I'll be honest with you. With my flip phone, I have more technology than I need. And I don't carry my phone with me. When I go out, obviously, I have it with me. But to me, it's a source for outgoing calls in case I'm in trouble. When I'm at home, I do not have my phone at a coffee table or an end table or something near me if I'm, walking around the house or watching television. It's usually in the kitchen in a drawer where I have a bunch of my stuff. A lot of times it rings and I don't even hear it from the kitchen. So that's how much I use my phone. So, and hey, people make fun of my flip phone. Oh my gosh. In fact, my producer, Mike, I showed him my cell phone, my flip phone today, and he went, wow, look at that. You thought he was looking at a dinosaur bone. Like I went to the Museum of Science and Industry and brought some relic back. But hey, I understand. But once again, I'm kind of old school anyway. I'm the type of guy who, when something gets too popular, I run away from it. I'm usually an early adopter. And I'm way ahead of the crowd. And then when the crowd catches up, I leave. Like if, for like, say, a fashion kind of thing. If I walk into a Target and I see something that I used to wear that's at Target, I stop wearing it. Uh-oh, it's too late. It's reached the masses. About 5 years ago, I was wearing the cool little 60s, you know, Mad Men hat. My dad had one from the late 50s, early 60s. This thing had to have cost a fortune even back then. It was from New York. I still have it, and it was in this beautiful box. It even had the little nub that you put the hat on top of so it doesn't lose its shape. And this had, I mean, it had the little feather, just the coolest hat on earth. So I started wearing this thing about 5-6 years ago, and I took a lot of heat. Because at that time, nobody was wearing those kind of hats. You know, the Mad Men dapper little fedora hat with the little small brim. And so I was wearing this thing. People were like, what are you? You know, what are you doing? And I'm like, hey, these hats are very cool. And I took a lot of heat from that. And then suddenly, more people start to wear it. Because I had seen some people wearing these hats in some magazine and said, hey, I've got one of those. Why don't I wear that? Well, then suddenly, everybody wore it. And like I said, when it got to Target, okay, so now I've got this great, beautiful hat that I would love to wear, but I can't bring myself to wear it because now I'll just be one of the crowd. So part of me with rebelling against the flip phone or the iPhone is the fact that I don't want to go along with the crowd, and my phone is more than useful for me and what I use it for. Now, as I said before, to talk about Tim Cook, Mr. Apple, you need to rebrand this. As I said, nobody is talking on the iPhone. You need to call it an iGadget, an iDevice, an iThingy. I don't know. But it's not an iPhone. It was an iPhone, and that's great, but it's not an iPhone anymore. Talking on an iPhone now is not even close to being one of the main things that people use it for. It's pictures, it's texting, whatever. So when you put the next one out, Mr. Galaxy or Mr. Samsung or Mr. Apple, you need to rebrand this thing. Because going forward, it makes me mad when I hear someone say, where's my phone? No, it's not a phone. It's your device. It's your thingy. It's not an iPhone. Anyway, so I'm very happy with my flip phone. Love it. I like when it flips. It's cool when it flips. It does have that Star Trek feel to it, which I'm sure is why the geeks who first invented the flip phone based it off of the transponder whatever that device was that Kirk would, you know, Mr. Scotty, are you there? I'm sure that that's what it was based on because those engineers all love Star Trek. So I don't mind even feeling a little, Kirkish or a little Spockish when I'm using my phone. But secondly, I have a friend of mine who is so mad when he sees my phone that one day we went out and he was going to drive me to the store to buy me one. I am taking you to the store, he said. You have to get an iPhone. I'm like, no, I don't need it. And first of all, I look around. I've got a camera. I've got a camera on this phone. Yes, I do. Listen. Did you hear that? I got a camera. I'll take another one. Boy, I don't even know. Boy, that picture that I just took, that could either be two fingers together or something completely different. I better not. Wow. I could be an Anthony Weiner territory with that picture. Wow. Believe me, folks, it's two fingers put together. It's not what you think it is, even though you can't see it. but no, did you hear? Like I said, let me find my camera. These things are so. La-dee-da-da. Okay, here we go again. There you go. So who says that the flip phone isn't hip? And not only that, I don't want to brag, but my flip phone has bowling and Tetris in terms of games. So you could talk about all your video games and all your Netflix and all your Amazon Primes and all your Hulus. All I know is I hit a couple of buttons, I'm bowling on my phone. Thank you very much. So anyway, and now the funny thing is that I just saw another friend of mine spend a few days out of town, and his wife is way into technology. She has got every gadget I've ever seen. She's got the Fitbit thing on her wrist. She's got everything, you name it. You know, the bed moves up and down. Everything that is electrical, they have. And that's great. I think that's fantastic, except it's just not for me. As I said many times, I have an Atlas in my car. That's how I get places. I look on the Atlas. Now, it's true. There are some roads on my Atlas that don't even exist anymore. Okay, I make amends for that as I'm driving. But so I go to their house, and they've got everything, and they're saying, why do you have, look at this phone, blah, blah, blah. And now I'm actually enjoying being the curmudgeon, being the tech, the anti-tech curmudgeon. And as I said, I like playing the role. So I'll say, well, hey, I don't need that. I've got my Atlas. I've got my thing. And I'll be honest with you. Some of it is a joke, but some of it I'm genuine in my thought of, I embrace technology, but I like technology that offers you something better than the way we used to do it. And technology certainly has done that. And there are aspects of the iPhone, or as I call it, the iThingy, which are great. As I said, I mean, that GPS is an incredible technology. I don't know how that voice knows when to turn left, but it's amazing. Or to stay to your right. But I do think that a lot of the apps that are available now, and I've seen my friends with them, they are apps or technology that we do this just because we can. Not because we need to, but because we can. Isn't this cool? I can blah, 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 blah. And I said, and my first question always is, but why? And that always stumps them. Because the answer is, well, because we can. Well, that's not enough for me. I enjoy technology that makes my life better. There's no doubt that we've had, you know, the radio and the television and the VCR and then the DVD and the CD and everything like that. They were things to enhance our lives and enhance our experiences. And don't get me wrong, some of the technologies and some of these apps do that. But I think a lot of these apps are just because, I mean, how about that great, there's a great commercial for GE. And the guy is trying to tell his friends that he works for GE and he's going to make the trains run on time and this happens. And his friend is talking about how he could put a face of an animal on anything or a face of a fruit on something. And that's his new job and that's his app. I can make a kumquat on here. And it's like, why? Just because you can. Not enough for me. So anyway, I am enjoying living in the 1990s with my flip phone. I am a proud member of the 90s. I am not ready to get into the next century. I'm still a 20th century man. You could have your 21st century. I'm still 20th century and proud of it. But don't get me wrong. I do like the 21st century. The year 2000 was very cool. The aughts, if you will. And now we're into the teens. Gosh, how fast is this going? But so I used my flip phone proudly. And I do make a point to make fun of those with the iGadget or the iDevice or the iThingy. So I'm scrolling around the internet the other day, and I see this story that makes me jump 10 feet in the air and just do, you know, a dance. It says it must be the early aughts because Razer flip phones are apparently coming back. Motorola, apparently, and I had one of these, Motorola apparently has released a video, and it is a teaser of the Razr phone, which, of course, was a flip phone. And apparently, Motorola is using a little nostalgia here. And it's funny what nostalgia is only now nostalgia. Before, nostalgia used to be like 20 or 30 years old. Now nostalgia is 5 years old. That's how fast everything is moving. But it even says here, and it sounds like it's a young writer of this thing that says, the oh-so-satisfying flip phone. You don't need to tell me. Alexandra Tsvakos, the writer on Digital Generation. I know how satisfying the flip phone is. The funny thing is, so they're coming back, and who's going to wind up looking, as usual, like Mr. Cool? Once again, Elton Jim, ahead of the pack by not following the pack. But I have to say that the funny thing is, I brought in, I still kept it. The only reason I have a flip phone, the only reason why I upgraded, and that's the word I will use, I upgraded to a flip phone was because my carrier, U.S. Cellular, about 2 or 3 years ago, got sold, and the U.S. Cellular technology would not be compatible with my Nokia phone. Now, if you remember the Nokia phone, it's this little silver thing with a small little screen and rubber numbers. And I had this thing until 2 or 3 years ago. And if Sprint, if U.S. Cellular had not sold to Sprint, I wouldn't even have the flip phone. I would still have my Nokia, even though this thing was so battered and bruised. If I dropped it, the whole thing would splatter. The front and the back, the battery would go flying, even the rubber numbers. I would have to go back and reapply the whole thing and reconstruct the phone back together and snap it, in fact. But I've kept this thing because it is so cool and so vintage. And one day, people are going to say, wow, I love your Nokia. As I believe, in the near future now it appears, that people are going to be looking at my Samsung flip phone and saying, wow, where did you get that? In fact, when I called Sprint to change my service, the guy, of course, is trying to upsell me on all these, you know, the Galaxy or whatever they've got, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, and I had to lie to him because I was embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. Well, not around my friends. I am a little embarrassed in carrying this thing around because they know me, but the average person doesn't know me. They think I'm a goofball. And so I lied to the guy on the phone, even though I'd never see him again. I didn't want to sound like I wasn't hip, like I wasn't on or in with the scene. And so I said, I said, I don't really need a high-functioning, phone with all these bells and whistles. This is just my second phone. It's just an emergency phone I keep in case something happens. So it's kind of just a throwaway thing. I don't even use it all that much, but I do want to have the service in case something does happen to my main phone, which, of course, folks, doesn't exist. This is my main phone. But he doesn't have to know that. He said, oh, well, then you might just want a flip phone, and we can send you that for free. Oh, fantastic. So not only did I get the cool flip phone that I wanted, but it was free on top of it. So I'm very proud. Hey, when I look at my flip phone right now, there's the time right out in the front on the little screen. Wednesday, no problem. I flip it open. I've got all my little numbers there. Because first of all, I text rarely. I have texted. I have entered the world of texting. But on this phone, obviously, I'm not able to have the virtual keyboard come up, and plus my thumbs are way too big. If I were trying to text the way most of these teenagers, most people do, where they don't even look and they're just moving their thumbs around, I would hit every letter. It'd be impossible for me to text. So texting is not easy for me because I literally have to go one finger at a time and look for the, I don't know what letters are on the three. I don't know. But anyway, I am excited. Because while I have been castigated and made fun of in the public square. I have been stripped naked and then walked down to the middle of the downtown, holding my phone as people say, "Shame, shame, shame." As I hold up my flip phone, I say to you, "No more shame, no more shame for this guy." Once again, Mr. Cutting Edge. So, talking about my flip phone, and as luck would have it, today I met a friend of mine, and then I went to the post office in my town. And so now I come back home, and I look in my car. I'm grabbing all my stuff, and I don't have my cell phone. And I'm like, where's my cell phone? So I'm looking in the car. I'm frantic now. Thankfully, I don't live too far from the post office, but I'm underneath the seats. I'm looking in between the seats. Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Now, the other side of the coin is, like I just talked about, believe me, if I lost this phone, there's nothing on it. I don't need to bowl. I don't need to play Tetris. There's 5 contact phone numbers, and there's 3 pictures. There's nothing on this phone of any importance, except that I use it to call out. So if I did lose it, no big deal. My whole life is not in my phone, like many people's are. But still, it's a phone. I need it. I may need it. There are some phone numbers in there that I might not have, or things I do have saved on there. We know how aggravating it is to not know where your phone is to lose it. So I'm looking all over the place. Where's my phone? I look under the seat. I get the flashlight. So now I'm like, oh, I wonder if I dropped it in the parking lot at the post office. So I hate to get back in the car. I'm looking all throughout the house. I know I brought it with me, so I know it's not in the house. And, you know, because it's so small, and because it has, you know, it's a flip phone, it's very slippery. It's got like a finish on it. I don't have, you know, like, you know, most people have the iGadget, and they've got the rubber thing around it, which gives it a little, you know, a little traction. I don't have that traction. This thing flies everywhere. So I'm like, I bet you it was in my pocket, and it flew out. So now I get back in the car. I drive to the parking lot, and I see somebody pull out of the spot I just had. And I wasn't there more than 5 minutes. So I'm like, hopefully, you know, if it is on the floor there, no one saw it. Or if they did see it, you know, they just left it there because they're hoping I'm going to come back. So I go there and they pull out and the phone is not there and I'm looking around the area and I go, I bet you those people just picked it up. And because it was, I don't mean to you know, stereotype, but it looked like it was a group of young toughs who looked like they would go out on the street and try to sell it for $20 to make money, whatever young toughs need money for. So I was, and I saw the young toughs pull out, and I was thinking of stopping the young toughs and asking the young toughs if they saw a phone. But then I was afraid, because I was afraid that the young toughs would beat me up or swear at me or follow me home. So I just let the young toughs go and said, well, I may have lost my phone. So now I'm very upset because I thought I would pull in. I would see it laying on the ground and life would be fine. So now I'm driving back and I'm thinking, now I have to call Sprint. I have to order a new phone. I have to remember the contact numbers I put in there. And I don't know what else is in some of my saved things. And what if I want to play bowling now for another week? How am I going to play bowling and Tetris? So then it hits me as I'm walking from the garage into the house. Call your phone. Call your phone. When I get in the house, I'm going to call my phone. And if it rings in the house and I've got a wireless phone, I'll go out to the garage. And if it's in the car, maybe underneath some kind of a mat or something that I couldn't find it with, it'll ring. And I'm like, okay, idiot, why didn't you think of this before you got in the car and drove to the parking lot again? But at least I thought of it. So now I run home. I get the phone, I dial my number, and I don't hear anything. And I'm like, son of a bee, I lost this phone. What a pain in the butt. And then there's like, must be a delayed reaction, even though my wireless phone is literally 40 inches from where the phone, all of a sudden, bring, bring, my cell phone rings. I don't know how it got here. I guess I sort of do. It was on top of my refrigerator. I would never put my phone on top of the refrigerator. The only thing I could think of is that I have a bunch of hats on top of my refrigerator. I must have had the phone in my hand, put it down, grabbed the hat, and then just went out. But thankfully, my phone, with all of its wondrous capabilities, the ability to call out, the ability to take an incoming call, the ability to take a picture, the ability to text, and the ability to bowl and play Tetris is still right in my fingertips. And of course, that again was my camera taking a picture. So I averted another disaster, but I have to tell you, when I was at that parking lot, I'm looking around going, what happened to my phone? And I knew then that I loved my flip phone. It's Elton Jim back here at the Captain Podtastic podcast here at WGN Plus. I am very happy to be back, and I appreciate being able to talk to you guys now on a weekly basis. I still plan on filling in on WGN Terrestrial Radio whenever they want me. I am certainly there, and I hopefully will continue to do that. But in the meantime, it's great to be able to talk to you on the podcast. And this is now the second podcast that we've had, and I'm very excited. We just posted the first one a couple of days ago, and really good reaction. So I appreciate the kind words and the support. And as I said, it's going to be your usual 2 pounds of bologna in a 1 pound bag, and it's going to be just the usual silliness and seriousness and fun that you've come to know and love from an Elton Jim kind of radio show. And that, of course, includes this, which is the Pop Culture Club segment. And to help me talk a little pop culture is what I would consider. I consider myself a pop culture guru, but I'll put this guy right next to me. I will. I've known him for 30 years, and he knows his stuff. Mick Kaler, how you doing?
I'm doing great, pal. Yeah, I'm a little wired in from time to time.
I would say so. If the name sounds familiar, as I've said many times, Mick has not only worked with some of the giants in Chicago radio as a producer, including Larry Lujak and Robert Murphy, but now, of late, he has become a standby, regular contributor to the WGN Morning News with some of his parody songs that he writes and produces with a guy named Al Flash. And so you have to be clued in to pop culture if you're going to write these parody songs, which, of course, parody what? Pop culture.
There you go. Well, you know, the thing is, I'm a media junkie like you are, Jim, so it's like I got to find something to do. People say, well, why do you write these things? And I say, well, I don't golf, I don't fish, I don't hunt, I don't collect stamps.
Exactly.
You know, so I got to do something in my spare time, right?
Well, that's like, you know, everybody gives me a hard time. You know, I've been to 164, yes, that's right, 164 Elton John concerts. And people say, why do you keep going to all these concerts? Isn't it so expensive? And I say, look, I'm not a big drinker. I don't take drugs. I have very few vices.
You have no children.
I have no kids. So, hey, what am I supposed to do? Who am I going to leave my vast empire to anyway? So if I gotta spend a few shekels here and there to see an Elton John concert, that's what I'm going to do.
There you go.
But anyway, so first of all, Mick, as I said, this is you are the charter member of the Pop Culture Club. And as I've tried to explain to people, it is kind of a play on words. I don't know if you, Mick, do you completely get the reference?
I do. It was very subtle, and it took some time and some deciphering. But I figured Pop Culture and then Culture Club because of the Boy George
band
Culture Club. I was able to tie it together, but it took some work. I mean, it took a few weeks of problem solving.
Well, like I said, so just so you get it, it's Pop Culture, and then it's Culture Club. It's kind of like this little club that we've got.
There you go.
And Culture Club is part of Pop Culture. You see? I mean, this little trite phrase works on about 15 different levels. My head is spinning. I'm watching a Bullwinkle cartoon right now. There's so many references. There's so many
double entendre.
There's so many hidden meanings in Pop Culture Club that, you know, years from now, people will still be trying to decipher exactly.
Yeah, it's like National Treasure, that movie. You know, yeah. There's all these little codes and tricks and stuff.
Nicolas Cage will be wondering, what did he really think? What was really behind that name? Because there's some I don't even realize.
There you go. That's it.
So anyway, we always like to talk, Mick and I love to talk about what's going on in the pop culture world. And mostly, we like to point out its absurdities. Unlike some of your other radio people who like to promote pop culture, as much as we love it, we love to put it down.
Yeah, Jim and I are the two guys in the back of the classroom making the snarky comments that crack everybody up.
I mean, don't you love that? I was thinking about that the other day because since I started doing the fill-ins on WGN radio is when we started doing this feature from the first one.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about what every topic that we've discussed, very few of them, I think maybe one, we talked about the Bruce Springsteen box set back in November or December when it came out, and we did actually say positive things about that. But everything else has been pretty much negative.
It's a teardown. Well, the thing is, you know, as the kids would say, Jim, we keep it real, okay?
Yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Yeah.
Yo, yo, yo. It's Grandmaster Jim and Run DM Mick. Yo, yo, yo. In the house.
That's it.
But boy. But I remember even one time we called, we were doing this segment, and Dean Richards called in, and he goes, "Why are you guys so negative?"
Yeah, I know. I remember we weren't that brutal that
no,
day.
No, I thought I was being puppies and rainbows. I was like, "Well, you think, wow, you haven't even heard negative yet."
Yeah, Dean, wait till you see when we really light up on things.
Yeah, wait till you hear me blast Carly Simon.
Yeah, or the Kardashians or
yeah,
something like
I mean,
that.
My gosh. I was just throwing softballs when Dean called in.
Yeah.
But and also, Dean wanted to be a member of the pop culture, so I have sent him a card as well. He's a charter member, too.
Right, so he's got his official credentials.
But so anyway, so here's the thing. We are going to, again, sort of have a little fun with pop culture and dissecting something that really struck me from clear out of the blue, and I wanted to throw this past you, Mick, and see what you think. So I'm looking at the Chicago Tribune this week, and on Tuesday, in fact, and the March 24th edition of the Chicago Tribune, and so the Cubs at this point were playing the St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis, and that's always a big rivalry.
Sure.
And so the story on the front page was the traveling circus, how a lot of, because it's so close, St. Louis is so close, and because they're such a rival of the Cubs, a lot of Cub fans make the trek down to St. Louis and cheer on their team. And there was this picture of a Cub fan leaning over the rail at a game and taking a photo with one of the Cubs. And it struck me that it has nothing to do with the story at all. This is the way my mind works, which is kind of scary. But I looked at this and I said, wow, you know, when I was a kid, when we went to a baseball game, we went and we bought the scorecard where you filled out all the names and you could fill out, you know, what each batter did every, you know, as the game goes on, the scorecard, not the program, but the scorecard. And that's what people used to. Do you ever do that at a baseball game?
Many times. Since I was like 8 years old and going to Cubs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and like, you know, if it's a ground ball to the third baseman.
Yeah, it's 5-3.
It's 5-3 because the third baseman is 5 and the first baseman is 3. Pitcher is 1, catcher is 2, first baseman's 3, and so on. So it's a 5-3, or it's a 6-5-3 double play.
Yeah.
Or 6-4-3 is usually what it is. But anyway, so I would buy that, and you get, and when you went to Wrigley, because that's where I went mostly, born on the northwest side, not far from Wrigley Field, where I grew up, and you'd get the scorecard for like 20 cents, and they'd give you the cool Cub pencil. Remember the Cub pencil?
Oh, sure. It was already sharpened for
you. Exactly. It was already sharpened.
Yeah.
And it had all the little Cub. It was white with all the little Cub round logo on it. But
yeah.
So
I think nowadays that'll cost you about $8.
Oh, I know. Believe me. Do they even sell the scorecard anymore?
the scorecard, the pencil, that's like a 20 right there.
Yeah, because now the pencil's a Mont Blanc. You can't just get the bad little number 2 pencil. It wasn't even number 2. It's probably a number 1.5.
Yeah.
But you'd go to the game early. You'd go for batting practice at like 10:30 or something. Game starts at 1:20. You'd go there early, and then you would, as the players would come out for batting practice. In fact, I think baseball autographs were the first ones I ever got.
Same here.
Yeah. And so at Wrigley Field, they'd come out from the side door behind in left field. That was where the door was at that time for the clubhouse. It wasn't out of the dugout.
Right.
And they'd walk out, and there you'd see these Cubs, these guys that you used to see on TV, and there they were in person, and you'd run to the bricks, and then a huge crowd would gather, and you were literally, people were on top of one another, leaning over, and you'd wave your scorecard and pray to God that they would grab it. And I've got like Ernie Banks.
Billy Williams was the first autograph I ever got.
I've got Ernie Banks. I still have some of those at home because I'm like, hey, this is Ernie Banks.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about the scorecards and the autographs, Jim, remember the people in the bleachers used to have a string.
Right, exactly.
And they would hang it down from the fencing, from the basket.
Yeah, from the basket.
The basket, and they would hang it down with a pencil, and then sometimes players would walk by and sign autographs.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. I wonder if they still do that.
I have no idea, but autograph.
That used to be that pencil. Oh, my gosh, you have just flashed me back in an instant. That was such a common sight at the Cub game from the bleachers.
You could see like a dozen of them per game.
Oh, my God. Well, here was the thing. So I see this picture of this woman leaning over, getting, and there's her friend taking the picture, and I'm like, wow, I wonder, do people even ask for autographs anymore?
In any situation where they meet famous people.
Yeah, when you meet a celebrity, do you ask for an autograph or ask for a picture?
You ask for a selfie.
I mean, today, yeah. I mean, I wonder, I mean, is the autograph, aside from, you know, they have some of those big types of, displays where, you know, Eddie Van Halen signs a guitar and then they frame it and they post it on something. And I think Jesse Jackson Jr. knows something about those.
Yeah, he bought a lot of bogus merchandise that he thought was real.
Yeah, and that's what got, you know what? If you're going to go to jail, don't go to jail for buying a counterfeit Eddie Van Halen guitar.
Yeah, or a Michael Jackson glove. Yeah. I mean, get the real deal.
At least if you're going to go to jail, do something bad.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Do something stupid like that. But anyway, so I was thinking to myself, I wonder now, because if you think about it, back in the days before, and I talked earlier in this show about the convenience of the eye, and I don't call it a phone because I don't believe it's a phone, the eye gadget, the eye thingy,
right,
the eye device. But, you know, there's this, not only is there a camera on your eye thingy, but it's a beautiful camera. It's a high-tech camera.
Yeah, you get some nice pictures.
I mean, nowadays, it's when a new version of one of those eye thingies comes out, the first thing they talk about is the camera has been upgraded.
Yeah,
they're not talking anything about the phone. They don't say,
right,
well,
they
you
don't
know,
care about that.
Yeah, they don't say like, now you can really hear the voice much clearer, and it sounds like the person's right in front of you. No. So anyway, now that we have access, because think about it too. We No one carried phone, or nobody carried cameras.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think you know the story when I was down at Southern Illinois University and Springsteen came in 81, and I was hanging out by the backstage area, and I was told he was coming in for his sound check. So me and about a dozen other fans, you know, hung out, and I had my books. I had just come from class, and Bruce came off the bus to sign autographs. And he signed autographs for everybody, was real nice, said hi to everybody for a couple minutes, and then he left. Not one person had a camera.
No, but why would you?
Yeah.
Why would you have a camera?
Yeah, and so you know, this was back in like 1981, so no one had a camera, so you got your autograph, he signed mine to, you know, signed my name and all that, you know, to Mick, Bruce Springsteen, blah, 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 and everybody else. But that was your proof that you met this person. Now you run into Bruce, you know, at a diner in Jersey or George Clooney at the supermarket. You get a selfie, and 5 seconds later, it's around the world on Facebook.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, I remember, as I said, my first autographs were like Jack Brickhouse, Ron Santo, Lou Boudreau.
Mm-hmm. I had Tony Esposito early.
Oh, yeah, I got Tony Esposito from a sports store. You know, that he went to and everything, but they were mostly sports people. But then, you know, my goal, like you're saying, was obviously to get Elton's autograph. And then one of my other goals was to get Springsteen's autograph. And the funny thing is, like you say, I also met Springsteen before a concert in 1984. This was before just the release of Born in the USA was out. So he wasn't like a god yet.
Right. It wasn't worldwide.
Yeah. He was still kind of a cultish thing. I mean, you know, Hungry Heart was getting played on the radio, but he wasn't, Dancing in the Dark was getting played. This is 84, but it wasn't like the album hadn't kicked in yet.
Right.
And so we were going to the concerts anyway, and so a bunch of friends of mine went early, and we hung around one of the doors at the then Rosemont Horizon. And sure enough, you know, this little caravan of vans pulls up, and Bruce just pops out of this van. He's all, you know, he's actually uncomfortable. He's like, he's trying to climb out of this. I'm like, nowadays, he'd be like in a beautiful SUV.
Yeah, he's like crammed with like three people yeah. sitting on his lap.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he's like Clarence Clemens weighs 300 pounds is sitting on Bruce's lap. You know, Clarence, can you move? I can't get up.
Come on, man, I got to play tonight.
Man, so he comes out and like, just like you said, it's like, I brought this, at record stores, they used to have, you know, a promotional thing of just the, what do they used to call those things, of the album covers?
They call them slicks.
Yeah, right, the slick. So it looked like the vinyl album cover, but it was just the front of it. And they would post it up, they would, you know, hang it up in their windows, and sometimes they'd have some extras hanging around. So I was able to get one of those. So I brought that one with me to get it signed, because that's what you do.
Yeah, get
because
your autograph.
We didn't, you know, I was what? And I was 20 years old. We didn't have a camera.
Yeah, no, and if you did, I mean, it was the rare person or the geek who's like, oh, I got my camera here. You know,
yeah,
just didn't happen.
And if you did, it was a horrible camera anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember those pictures that that didn't even have a white border?
Yeah, they called it borderless silk, and it was just this funky little edge. Yeah,
I hated those. So yeah, anyway, well, you know, everyone used to get the autograph. I mean, that was the thing. In fact, I found some stuff of my late mother's. And she had like a whole scrapbook filled with, you know, autographs. In fact, I found this one album by Sophie Tucker.
Okay.
It says, to Lorraine, Sophie Tucker. I don't know how much that's worth on eBay.
Right. Well, keep in mind what you just said about autographs and collections, Jim. People used to buy autograph books.
Oh, definitely.
Where you have it was just an, you know, blank pages, and then it'd be like, oh, I'll take my autograph book because I'm going to meet, you know, Johnny Cash
exactly.
backstage, or Bette Midler's coming to this store, and I'll have her sign my autograph book. That's what everybody did, and nowadays I don't think there probably is such a thing as an
autograph wonder
book.
If you talk to a major celebrity, a group of major celebrities, I bet you that they don't even sign autographs anymore. Now, the funny thing was that several years ago, the comedian Steve Martin used to do, as only Steve Martin could do and think of, which was genius. When he would meet somebody, he already had in his wallet pre-printed business cards.
Right.
That said, I met Steve Martin.
and I found him to be delightful and nice and all this.
And so if you met Steve Martin on the street, instead of asking him for an autograph, he would just give you one of these cards.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so anyway, I'm getting back to my Springsteen story. So he signs, you know, if you know what the cover of Born in the USA looks like, it's the picture of Bruce with the the white T-shirt and the hat and the, you know, in the back of his back pocket of his jeans. And so Bruce signs Bruce Springsteen, very nice, you know, right in the middle of the white T-shirt. You can read it perfectly. And I'm in, you know, I'm in, you know, seventh heaven.
Yeah.
And we talked to him and easily at that time, easily could have gotten a picture, could have got 40 pictures.
Get everybody posing. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there was nobody around. There was like 15 of us there. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm kicking myself. Part of me kicked myself because I didn't bring a camera. But the other part of me said, don't kick yourself, because where would you even have had a camera? You had a horrible camera. You know, it just wasn't something that we carried around.
It was not the norm. And
no.
It wasn't until years later when those disposable cameras came out, and even those took bad pictures.
Yeah. So now, this was in 1984. So as soon as the euphoria of meeting Springsteen and him autographing this album cover thing, what bugged me about it, because here's the other side of the autograph world, which I think, as we talked about here, may be disappearing or may already be dead. It wasn't good enough that you got the autograph. Because, like, what did you say, Bruce? What did Bruce sign on yours?
To Mick.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I didn't have a two Jim.
Okay, so what'd you do?
So, well, first of all, I killed myself for 10 years.
Yeah, like, oh, why did I have to say, please put the Jim?
Every time I looked at that thing, it was very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
I mean, I was framed. I had the ticket stub. You know, I went to the professional framing store.
Right, you got it all down,
yeah,
but you don't have two Jim.
But it didn't say two Jim on it, and it bugged the hell out of me. So, flash forward, 1994.
Only 10 years later.
Only an Elton Jim would do this. So, I go to see Bruce at this Rainforest concert at Carnegie Hall in New York, which was an awesome concert. And Sting used to put these concerts on every year and put together a really eclectic and major superstar lineup. I saw some amazing people. Went to two or three of these over the years. I mean, I saw Pavarotti and Whitney Houston sing together.
Wow.
Yeah, just unbelievable. And Paul Simon all of a sudden just walks on stage. Or, you know, anybody in New York, oh, there's Billy Joel. And James Taylor would be there, and Elton would be there, and Sting would be the top three. But they would just have people walking on and be like, oh, my gosh. Oh, there's Tammy Wynette. Hello. And so they were great concerts. But this one year that Springsteen was on, we went, and they had an after-concert dinner at the Waldorf Astoria, where they would have an auction and everything to really raise money for the Rainforest. So my wife and I go, and we're sitting way at the top. I mean, you know, these tables are ridiculously priced, but we're sitting way at the top of the Waldorf Astoria, which I was a little disappointed in because I was so far from the action. But then was also good because I had an aerial view of the main floor.
So you could track Bruce and his movements.
Yes, I could. I was
Mr. Stalker.
I was GPSing before there was even those three letters were even together.
Yeah, you were locked in on what he was doing.
Yeah, because I brought with me to New York the 10-year-old album slick.
Did you have it still in the frame?
No, it wasn't in the frame. I didn't have it in the frame.
Hang on a second, Bruce. Let me pull this out.
Yeah, could you help me pull this apart and destroy this frame? And be careful with the matting, which it's silk.
Yeah, I paid $40 for that, you know.
Yeah. So I brought that with me. I had a little holder, and so I'm watching Bruce now from atop the Waldorf Astoria, and he's at this table, and he's with Sting, and he's with, you know, his wife and everything, and I'm watching because I'm like, okay, there's got to be a moment when he moves around.
Yeah, I got to do something. Go
gets
to the
away
bathroom.
From that table, and I could shoot down and get him. And all I want to do, I'm not going to accost him. All I want is just a two Jim. Just personalize it so now I can sleep. Because I haven't been able to sleep for 10 years with this half-baked autograph.
This empty gesture.
Yeah, I could have bought that from Jesse Jackson Jr.
There you go.
It could be fake. I don't know. So I see him get up. So I run down. Now I'm running down like we're at like the third floor. So I'm running down all of these stairs, and I've got a suit on because everybody's dressed up. So I'm flying down these stairs, and I see him, and he's surrounded by like three guys. Not a huge
security people. Because, in detail.
Because once again, this is 1995. And you got to remember, at that time, Springsteen was sort of in a quiet period in his career.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't being mobbed.
Right.
At all. It was almost like, oh, and there's Bruce Springsteen. Who cares? So he was, you know, but he obviously had some people around him, but nobody was bothering him at all.
Yeah, just doing his thing.
Yeah, because he wasn't really, you know, he didn't reemerge yet. So I've got my marker, and I've got my thing, my little Born in the USA cover, and I could see that he's going to the bathroom.
Right.
Now, I can't follow him into the bathroom.
But you're going to get him before then.
Well, I don't know. It's like, but I can't. I can't get him before he's in there. But I'm saying to myself, okay, I know he's in the bathroom. Now, do I go into the bathroom? But if I go in the bathroom, I can't pull this out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what a great story that is to be in the bathroom with Bruce Springsteen.
I could just see Bruce at the urinal, and all of a sudden Jim slides in next to him and puts the slick up on the top of the urinal with the pen and just leaves it there.
Hey, when
you're go, Bruce.
Hey, before you zip up, can you give me a two, Jim? So I go, you know, that's a great story. But then if I follow him into the bathroom, then I'm not fulfilling my real mission.
Yeah,
which is to get my two, Jim, on here.
Right.
So I go, no. That first of all, that'll be cheesy. Hey, I don't want to be a scary fan.
Yeah, you're scary enough. You don't want to be like, you know, candy-based misery scary.
Yeah. Listen to me trying to, you know, rationalize my scariness. Well, I don't want to be one of those fans. I'm just carrying an autograph 1,500 miles, you know, in a plane and trying to get a guy to write to Jim on it. But
well,
I'm not
this way. Jim doesn't want to be the scary fan. That ship has already sailed.
Yeah. So I go, no. You know, so some logic, you know, overcomes me for the first time. So I say, okay, I'm going to let him come out of the bathroom. I'm not going to accost him at the urinal. Or especially, how great would this would have been? So I walk into the bathroom and I look under the stalls for like boots.
And Bruce dropping a deuce.
Yeah, and then I go in. So here's the best part. So this would have been great. So then I see him. I see the cowboy boots. I get into the stall next to him, and then I slide the thing underneath.
Tweaking it at him. Here you go.
Like with the pen, on top of it.
And you're going, two Jim, please.
Yeah, could you just give me a two Jim? Like, it's like George Costanza giving the $3 to the soup Nazi.
Yeah.
Just laying it on the thing and taking two steps over. So just laying the pen on top of the Born in the USA thing and say, can I have a two Jim on there when you're done? That, how great would that?
I'm glad that Bruce didn't have to use a stall.
Yeah, so thankfully, no, I didn't go to the bathroom. So now I'm waiting. So clearly, you know, he had some business to do in there because it wasn't 5 minutes.
Oh, God.
So I come out. So he comes out, and he's still got these big, burly guys there.
Yeah.
And I go, Bruce. And he stops, and then he says, this is the guy I was telling you about. No, no.
Yeah, this is a scary guy.
This is the scary guy that I thought was following me to the bathroom. I told you about him. No, he looks up, and he's very nice, and no one's around us. We're kind of in this little area where there's not a lot of people, so no one's clamoring him. And I just go up to him. I said, look, Bruce, I said, you know, I'm a huge fan. I said, 10, because even on the back side, I wrote the date
right
of when I got this. I said, look, I said, you know, 10 years ago, outside of Chicago, I got this autograph from you. I said, but all you put is Bruce Springsteen. I said, it's bugging me for 10 years. Can you just, I don't want anything else. Just give me a two, Jim.
Oh,
and he's like, yeah, no problem, man.
Yeah, I got it, man. Okay.
Yeah. Thank God you didn't give it to me in the stall like that other guy did. And so he writes to Jim. And once again, though, I have him.
Yeah.
I have him captive, and I don't get a picture.
Again,
because this is 94. There's no such thing as a cell phone with a camera.
Right. That was technology that was still down the road.
Oh, so at least.
Well, you know the funny thing was?
At least I do have the two Jim from Bruce Springsteen. It's in the frame.
The funny part about that official story, Jim, you walked away, and then that Bruce, he turned to his people, and he said, "It's been bugging me for 10 years that I never signed that guy's autograph to his name."
I know. See, he knew, too. I could see when I said, "Hey, Bruce," he knew exactly what I wanted.
Exactly. He's like, he remembers, Jim, I remember you, Chicago, Roadrunner Horizon,
You want a 2 Jim on here, don't you? Yeah, no problem. So then, so I'm so happy. But now the best autograph story is this is early 90s. Now, I've been an Elton fan forever, and you know that. So I have never gotten Elton's autograph. So I'm now very upset. It's like, 1992. It was the one tour. And I said, I need to get Elton's autograph. This is ridiculous. And I've gone up to the stage and with the programs, and he never grabs mine.
Right.
I meant programs, by the way. Because he has been getting in trouble for grabbing things lately.
That's true.
With former employees.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. So I'm like, I have to bring something unique that will catch his eye.
Yeah.
When I go up to the stage and everybody's, throwing things at him. And I go, I've got an Elton John pillow from 1974.
That you used to sleep on, which is really scary.
So it's a decorative pillow. It's very nice. He's got the nice little palm tree glasses.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm bringing this with me. So
this is Poplar Creek, right?
So this is Poplar Creek, 1992.
Yeah.
So, and if you remember, and you actually used to work at Poplar Creek for a while, the Poplar Creek stage was not very tall.
No, there was no pit, so it was very accessible.
Yeah, no pit. It was just the stage. It was just there. Boom. Very accessible.
Yeah.
And especially if you sat in the front row, you were right on the stage.
Right.
So I had a second row seat to the left of the to the right of the stage, and at that time he was playing his little organ. No, he was playing a keyboard in the middle of the stage, as opposed to his big piano, which is usually on the left. So I was kind of close, and I brought my pillow. I had my little Rolling Stone record store bag, my little plastic bag from Rolling Stone Records at Harlem and Irving. And I put the bag in there, and security let me in, and they looked at me kind of strange, like, why do you have a pillow? So now, every time Elton stood up and came toward the front of the stage, people would rush the stage for an autograph.
Yeah, hold up their pens, hold up their posters and stuff.
Well, so I started going up there with my pillow. So,
oh my God,
like three times, and I can't get there close enough to get the pillow. But now people that are sitting around me, they see that I've got the pillow, and they're kind of rooting for me.
Yeah, you're the underdog. You're Rudy,
exactly. I'm Rudy of autographs. So now it's toward the end of the concert, and now Elton is at the far left side of the stage, and I've gone up there three times now. No satisfaction. So I say, I don't care. He's walking back to the keyboard, and I just scream from the side of the stage. Elton! Elton! And I flash the pillow. I hold the pillow up and show him the pillow. And sure enough, good guy that he is, he walked all the way across the stage right to me. There's no one else around. And signed the pillow. And I come back to my seat, and everybody in my section is clapping for me.
And they're doing that slow clap like they do at the end of movies.
And they're like, he got the pillow.
Right.
And I was a happy man once again. Now, the bad thing about the pillow, though, Mick?
I'm guessing.
Guess.
It doesn't say to Jim.
It doesn't say to Jim on it.
Why didn't you put a sticky note on it?
So even though I've met him a few times, I never brought the pillow back. But now that you mentioned this to me, I have that pillow displayed in my little semi-Elton room. And now that's bugging me.
Oh, my God.
So maybe I have to bring that pillow back.
Well, and again, getting back to the autograph things, like you said, of people, at concerts getting things signed. And I've been to enough Elton John shows to see him do that. He's been very graceful and gracious about that. But with the loss of autographs, what's happened to the Sharpie Corporation, the Sharpie pens?
No kidding. Well, you can see the people that want the autographs are older fans who bring the old albums.
Yeah.
So I have to say that, unfortunately, in this selfie world, I think the autograph has lost its luster.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, when you talk about selfies now, there are some celebrities who are actually getting tired of getting bum-rushed for the selfies. I think Amy Schumer has talked about people being rude, and I guess Justin Bieber, not that that's a great loss, but he's like, man, I don't want to do selfies anymore with people. Yeah, like, so. Okay, fine, whatever.
Well, you and I are old school.
Right.
And I still like a good autograph.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Didn't you used to practice your autograph at home?
Oh, yeah. If I ever become famous, this is what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I did it all the time. And I'm still doing it, sadly.
No, but, you know, you bring up a point, like I said, you know, in my radio days, I took millions of listeners back to meet, you know, artists, rock stars, country stars, you name them, and every once in a while someone would think to bring a camera, but it was usually just autographed pictures, you know, of or CDs or albums that people got signed, and then again, like maybe in a group, there'd be like a group photo, and sometimes the record company would take a picture, but this was way before the selfie craze.
Yeah. Well, Mick, once again, a very sarcastic and biting and reminiscing Pop Culture Club segment.
Well, your Elton John pillow story just...
No, I'll tell you, I really like the Bruce Springsteen in the stall.
Yeah,
I wish I would have done that. Well, until the next Pop Culture Club segment, Mick, if you want an autograph, I'll always sign you one.
Thank you. You're very big like that. No matter how famous you get, buddy, you always remain real and true.
You know me. All right, Mick. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Okay, that's Mick Kaler with another segment of Pop Culture Club. Looking at the clock, and wow, it's time for us to go here. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. Thank you for listening to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Please keep coming back every week to WGN Plus and clicking on to the newest podcast that we post. If you haven't seen the other ones up there, by all means, click on. We're having fun. Hope you can join it with me. Talk to you soon.